Good day, all. My guest today is Aaron McElroy, co-founder of the Anti-Eviction Mapping Project. And Aaron is also currently part of a new project to investigate artificial intelligence behind property technology or prop tech. And Aaron also has co-founded the Radical Housing Journal. Welcome, Aaron.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
So, Aaron, you have a very interesting background. Besides what you're doing currently, you also have a doctoral degree in feminist studies from the University of California, Santa Cruz. How did you gravitate toward housing justice?
I was initially in Romania and learning a lot there about 10 years ago about forced evictions that were taking place. That's actually when I started learning about evictions. I was living in the San Francisco Bay Area at the time and started to notice that there too, people were being evicted, particularly as the Silicon Valley tech boom. From the beginning, I just was noticing in both cases in Romania, but also in the Bay Area, evictions were happening disproportionately with tenants of color. A lot of my friends and community members in San Francisco started getting evicted. And it was really then that I helped start the Anti-Eviction Mapping Project.
So I would really, if you could touch on the Anti-Eviction Mapping Project, how does it help tenants?
Yeah, so I started it with a couple other housing organizers in the San Francisco Bay Area in 2013. And we knew that evictions were picking up in San Francisco and in Oakland, but we didn't know necessarily geographically if there were certain areas that they were happening in at higher and faster rates. And even more so, we wanted to know who the evictors were. And that's not information that you can get from the city or database, unfortunately. So from the beginning, the project formed really as a way to find out information that could embolden already existent grassroots organizing that was happening on the ground. We knew that with data, we could form better campaigns and also figure out who the serial evictors were. One thing that we've, from the beginning and that we're still working on, is finding ways for tenants to better understand other buildings that their landlords own so that they can organize multi-building campaigns against serial evictors and corporate landlords. So that was really what motivated us in the beginning to get going. And then about a year into the project, we realized that there were a lot of stories that we wanted to be able to highlight. So we launched an oral history wing to the project, conduct interviews with people who were being evicted and also fighting back.
Is it possible for tenants from other areas outside of New York City to be involved or add to the database? Here in Albany, we have some housing advocacy groups. Is that something that we could do too? Because you're right, a lot of these landlords hide behind LLCs, and it's really, really difficult to find out what buildings they own.
And we're just one of many groups that are trying to do this work. We're a volunteer-based collective. Anybody can get involved. We have this one tool that we've been developing called Evictor Book, which allows users to look up an LLC or an address. Right now, it's only working in San Francisco. So anybody can get involved. But there's a similar tool that a group called Just Fix made for New York City already. So that already exists for New York, which is great.
So I really wanted to talk with you about the Landlord Tech Project. And can you talk about this and how it got started too? Because that's really very interesting.
I first started learning about what's called property technology or prop tech by the real estate industry, I guess about a year and a half ago. I was in Romania, and there were some friends I had there who worked in an outsourcing company, basically answering phone calls for this company called Yardi. And Yardi's been around, it turns out, since the 80s. It's based in California, and it's considered a property technology company that Invitation Homes and Blackstone, which is the world's largest landlord, uses to manage its property.
Can you give our listeners some examples of property technology?
So it includes, you know, these sorts of like virtual landlords and property managers, but it also includes tenant screening, which has been around since the 70s. It's not a new thing, but it's been really, it's ballooned as of late. So basically these ways that landlords run credit checks and also like criminal record checks and also prior eviction checks on prospective tenants to determine whether or not they should be allowed to live in a particular building. And
what about entry screening systems and facial recognition?
Yeah, exactly. So that's when I moved to New York a year ago, that was what I started focusing on the most. So There was a case in Brownsville in Brooklyn at Atlantic Plaza Towers, where it's a two-building, 718-unit rent-stabilized complex. And the landlord there, Robert Nelson, decided that he wanted to force the tenants to give up their key fobs and in exchange have to subject their faces to a heat mapping biometric facial recognition system made by a company called Stonelock, which is based in Kansas. And the idea was that this, you know, the landlord was saying that this would make the building safer. And what the tenant said was, like, they had a lot of concerns. They have an active tenant association, but safety isn't and hasn't been one of their concerns. They had a lot of other concerns. And so they're like, why is this being prioritized when we've been making these other demands? And what they realized was that this technology wasn't really going to be implemented to make their lives safer, but really to catch them for petty lease violations and to surveil them and possibly evict them.
So what is this project doing? What is the landlord tech project doing?
Those tenants were able to fight back and keep this from being implemented. And they worked with Brooklyn Legal Services. And one of the things we learned in this work was that there's no database of how profuse this problem is. And there's no incentive for landlords or property technology companies to register how many buildings these systems are deployed in, or, you know, really have any sort of public facing information about harms. So our site, Landlord Tech Watch, is a site where we define what landlord tech is, offer it a nomenclature, and make it easy for tenants to understand what potential harms are that are associated with these different technologies. And then we also have a survey that feeds a map so we can begin to see where this is being deployed, what types of landlord tech are being deployed, and how tenants feel about it and are impacted by it, and how it's connected to contexts of gentrification.
So how are these impacting housing, you know, the digitizing of housing justice, so to say, and reshaping how people rent and buy and sell and how landlords operate? How is this impacting housing justice?
Often it's creating housing injustice, I would say, first and foremost. I mean, we as the Mapping Project, I guess you could say we're using technology to fight for housing justice, but landlord tech, on the other hand, is using technology often to create housing precarity and incite contexts of gentrification. On our site, we've categorized landlord tech as having kind of two main categories. One is surveillance. So that includes like the facial recognition, the tenant screening systems, but basically ways that landlords are gathering data about us as tenants and using that to track us, to prevent.
Yeah, so if you're swiping every time you go in and out of your building, you don't have an actual key,
but
you're swiping or you're punching a code.
Yeah.
And the facial recognition, I think I've read someplace that it can misidentify you, so.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And I mean, scholars who've been studying facial recognition and the training labeling, the labeling systems and the algorithms that enable them to, you know, figure out who somebody is, it's been proven that these systems are extremely biased. They are known to falsely or misidentify people of color, women, particularly Black women, up to 40% of the time. So, you know, not recognize them or give them false or produce false positives. So mistake somebody for somebody else. Whereas they're much more accurate when it comes to white men. And that's because when you look at how these systems have been designed and the different data that supports and feeds their algorithms, I mean, they're produced in extremely racist and sexist and, you know, very heteronormative context. So what's really troubling is that a lot of this technology is being tested out in buildings where it's predominantly poor and working class tenants of color who, you know, might not be even able to get into their building because the system doesn't understand who they are.
One of my questions is this using this technology being used a lot by HUD housing, housing?
So, right. So, I mean, it's funny. So it's being deployed in, you know, rent stabilized and affordable housing, sometimes federally subsidized housing. It's been deployed in Knickerbocker Village in the Lower East Side of New York for since 2014 without tenant consent, very much, you know, in this experimental like lab rat sort of way. But then it's also being deployed in really high-end luxury housing, and it's being, you know, advertised as an asset. So for people who don't, who kind of think, oh, a digital doorman, that's a perk, I want that, you know, new luxury condos will list that as something desirable. And of course, it could be desirable to somebody who's not at risk for being, you know, targeted by it, you know, who, somebody wealthy, somebody white. But when it's implemented in housing without tenant consent, where it's mostly tenants of color and poor and working class tenants, it produces effects that make their lives actually less safe.
So, is there any current legislation to limit the invasion of individuals' privacy when it comes to this prop tech technology?
Yeah, there's a piece of legislation called the No Biometric Barriers Housing Act, and that was introduced last year. It hasn't been passed, but it would prohibit facial recognition systems from being deployed in public housing specifically.
Is that national legislation?
That would be national if it were to pass it. That would be federal. One of the problems, though, is that, I mean, for years, you know, surveillance cameras, CCTV cameras have already been deployed in public housings. You know, there's right. ample surveillance already in public housing. So, but still, this would prevent the implementation of specifically facial recognition systems in public housing. But, you know, there's a long way to go because, you know, this is also being deployed in rent-stabilized housing that's not public necessarily. Okay. And then meanwhile, there are, you know, Amazon Ring or Google Nest. There are so many of these facial recognition cameras that people are putting up or landlords are putting up sometimes. Like, it could be a small property owner. It could be a big property owner. And there's already ample proof that these systems not only surveil tenants, but also other people in the neighborhood who pass by. You know, there have been cases of people having been arrested because, you know, Amazon Ring has contracts with hundreds of police departments across the U.S. at this point.
Okay.
So
I just want to, we're going to have to kind of wrap up.
Sure.
But before we go, I would love if you can just talk about the Radical Housing Journal and why you folks started it. And I think one of the most interesting things is one of the manifestos had to do with housing as an unalienable right. And I don't know if you want to talk to that. And then my last question is can capitalism save affordable housing?
I guess first, the Radical Housing Journal, it's a collective project that began a couple of years ago. I'm one of the co-founders and I'm an editor for the journal. And right now we're publishing two issues a year, all focused on housing justice. Some are thematic issues, some are more general. So we just published issue 2.1 a couple months ago, and we have, you know, some introductory articles and editorials where we were trying to offer an analysis of how tenants were being impacted, but also fighting back in the wake of COVID. Our first issue was about 2008 as a field of inquiry and sort of a retrospective looking back 10 years. The first issue came out in 2018, so we wanted to think about how, over the course of 10 years, housing justice struggles have transformed and also...
So how have they transformed? Because I noticed a lot of the articles are written by folks from all over the world.
Yeah, so it's global in scope, and that's really important to us. And we're trying our hardest to kind of decenter Western and Northern ways of thinking, and to really think from the South, and also to think about what international solidarity might look like across regions, which is so important when you think about companies like Blackstone. Or Airbnb, you know, Airbnb was also birthed in 2008 in San Francisco, and now is like has impacted tenants all over the world, and led to, you know, wide scale evictions and gentrification. And then Blackstone, like I mentioned earlier, owns property globally and has profited off of foreclosure, particularly, which is highly racialized. And, you know, so we're really interested in offering knowledge and insight from people who are not just studying these phenomenon, but who are also actively fighting against them in different parts of the world. So we specifically, when somebody submits an article, if it's for peer review, we make sure that one of the reviewers can be in academia, but at least one of them has to be firmly rooted in struggle.
Okay.
And, yeah. Oh, we have to wrap.
So can you just go to that? My last question was, can capitalism save or help affordable housing? And in like 20 seconds.
I would say no. I think we need anti-capitalist solutions. I don't think there's any hope of capitalism saving us. I think it specifically was designed to create massive inequalities and inequities and racism. So I would say no.
And before we go, and I really appreciate your time, could you let folks know where they can get information on the anti-eviction mapping project and the landlord tech project?
Yeah, so all of the landlord tech project is, you can find that on the anti-eviction mapping project's website, which is just antievictionmap.com. We're also on social media, but yeah, just check out our website and all of our maps and stories, and we even have a book coming out soon. All the information is there.
Wonderful. Well, I thank you, Erin, for your time today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Okay. And this is Michelle Masurgeon from the Upstate Housing Program for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.